Russia prepares to mark the centennial of the February 1917 revolution, the Orthodox Church abroad calls for the burial of Bolshevik leader Vladimir Lenin's body and the destruction of monuments to him. Hello from our broadcast headquarters in Prague, and welcome to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at stories we expect to make news this week. My name is Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical podcast here at RFERL, and joining me in the studio is RFERL news editor Steve Gutterman. Welcome, Steve.
Hi, Brian.
So this week marks the anniversary of the climax of the February 1917 revolution. March 15th is the day, the centennial of the abdication of Tsar Nicholas II. And this is an event, to put it mildly, that the Kremlin is uncomfortable about marking. And the Russian Orthodox Church abroad used the occasion to call for Lenin's burial. And the appeal is getting some play in the Russian media. It came to our attention through Interfax.
Right.
Steve, this is something you've been following. You wrote a piece late last year about the possibility that this may indeed be the year Lenin's buried. What did you make of this appeal? Does this look like a staged thing, or is it? What do you make of this?
Well, I think there's two potential ways to look at it. One is that, you know, it's a sort of a genuine appeal from the Russian Orthodox Church abroad, that they're sort of saying, okay, you know, Putin, Kremlin, you want a show of reconciliation. You want to kind of bring the whites in and show that the rifts have healed. But you know, you can't do that without getting rid of this glaring, you know, symbol of communism in the middle or on Red Square. So, you know, that's one way of looking at it, as kind of a gambit almost, or you know, a genuine effort by the church to say, look, you know, we're ready to kind of help with the reconciliation, but you need to do this. It's time. Another way is to see it is as you say, you know, somewhat staged or orchestrated by the Kremlin. Could be a way of saying, look, you know, we've always said that the time will come for this, but maybe it hasn't come yet to get, you know, remove Lenin and bury him. But look, you know, we're under pressure. This is a call being made by you know, part of the church, which Putin had sort of united or presided over the reunification 10 years ago, I think. So could be the Kremlin saying, look, we're coming under pressure, and this is really the right thing for Russia. You know, why do we have to, you know, to listen to the communists? And as I think has been discussed, I mean, one thing that getting rid of Lenin on Red Square would do is deal a blow to the communists, who are showing some signs of revival, you know, of being revival and being challenging. So, you know, this is one way to see that. And a side thing, I guess, is that the statement from the Russian Orthodox Church abroad was quite anti-Western and kind of stressed the idea that the revolution was Western organized and supported. So, you know, you could have, and that's, I mean, a card obviously that the communists have used, but here you could have Putin or, you know, the Kremlin saying, look, you know, this is all part of the Russian thing. You know, what getting rid of the symbol of revolution is is getting rid of a symbol of Western influence on Russia.
Yeah, no, and I've pointed out the first colored revolution in the world was not orange or rose or tulip, it was red. And it happened in Putin's hometown of St. Petersburg. And this makes this anniversary a deeply uncomfortable thing for the Kremlin to mark. And they are scrambling and trying to find a way to frame this thing. They're reaching out to the descendants of the whites, as you pointed out, and trying to turn this into kind of a Russian reconciliation thing. They've reached out, of course, to the Russian Orthodox Church abroad, and there's been hints that maybe this will be the year that they bury Lenin. It certainly would be a dramatic event, and they could almost turn the centennial into a celebration of anti-revolution. So that's where I think they may be going with this. We'll see.
Exactly. I mean, but on the other hand, as you point out, you know, this is a revolution, a centenary that the Kremlin is quite uncomfortable about you know, marking. You know, there have been stories in the media about how essentially they're trying to ignore it. So, you know, I guess it could still go either way. Do they decide to, do they really try to ignore it, or do they, you know,
decide to use it and exactly. manipulate it to their purposes? And I guess this, again, we don't know if this was staged, if this was sincere request by the Russian Orthodox Church abroad, seeing the difficult position the Kremlin is in, and thought maybe this is the time to make its move. We obviously don't know. It's getting play in the Russian press, though, and that tells me something. In another topic in the news this week, protests in Belarus continued over the weekend and are showing no signs of abating, despite Alexander Lukashenko's suspension of an unpopular tax on the unemployed. I made this argument in the morning vertical today, we seem to be entering uncharted waters here. These protests are being driven not by the traditional opposition, but by the Belarusian street. They're happening in provincial cities across Belarus, not just in Minsk. And Lukashenko doesn't seem to know how to handle them. First, he tried placating the protesters. That didn't work. And now he's arrested some opposition leaders. We'll see if that work doesn't work. I don't think that's going to work either, because the protests are continuing to grow. Meanwhile, the Kremlin is watching this very, very attentively. Your thoughts, Steve?
Well, I think you're right. I think the Kremlin is watching intensively. I mean, I guess the question would be, you know, does Russia or the Kremlin see this as kind of an opportunity or as sort of a threat? I mean, on the one hand, Lukashenko, despite his, you know, his kind of rocky relations, he's always criticizing, you know, Russia and then going back to criticizing the West. There has been a change in that since the annexation of Crimea and aggression by Russia in Ukraine, but still, you know, he does seem to go back to Russia, and you know, he is to some degree a reliable ally. In that way, unrest in Belarus and the possibility of Lukashenko being, you know, eventually removed or, you know, of unrest there could be a threat to the Kremlin. But on the other hand, you know, they may see it as an opportunity to take advantage of instability and, you know, get their own person in there or try to at least increase control over this country that's become a bit of a wild card.
I mean, I've always said, like, the best Lukashenko could do is to beat Ceausescu. Right. He can be the wayward, or as Andrew Wilson puts it, the truant ally. But he couldn't be Tito. He can't break with Moscow. Moscow wouldn't allow that. And I don't think he shows any inclination of doing that. And I don't think the Belarusian population wants that, to be quite frank. But what's happening now is this game in the past had always been played out between the Kremlin and Lukashenko. And now there's a third player in the game, and that third player is a real wild card. And it's not the opposition, it's the Belarusian street. It's ordinary people with declining living standards that are fed up. And this makes it a real wild card. I don't think the Kremlin's behind this, but I think that they definitely are watching it and trying to figure out how they can maneuver it to their advantage, either by offering Lukashenko help, but with the condition that he be much more pliant. Like give them that air base they've been trying to get for the past year that he's not giving them.
Right.
Or in the worst case scenario, yes, remove him. That's risky because they're not sure they're not completely confident they could control the transition if they removed him. But it's again, I think they're working on these contingencies as we speak right now.
And it's interesting to think. I mean, you mentioned offering help, but with conditions. I mean, that's sort of what happened with Yanukovych in Ukraine. Came in with help. But they had some, you know, they were essentially telling him to crack down, and you know that didn't go very well. So.
No, and that says something about Ukrainian civil society and Belarusian civil society. The Belarusian street, if you will, is untested because when Yanukovych cracked down, that just served to bring more and more people out onto the streets. If Lukashenko really cracked down, we really don't know. And there's in this situation, we have to have a lot of epistemological modesty because we don't know as much about Belarus as we should. In a recent piece, Andrew Wilson at King's College, who in my opinion is one of the better, if not the best, Western observer of Belarusian affairs, said we have become very good Lukashenkoologists, right? We know how to study this man and his behavior,
right.
But we're not very good Belarusiologists, if that's a word even. But we don't understand enough about the political system, the clans, the factions. For example, Lukashenko allegedly purged the pro-Russian elements out of the Belarusian security service. Did he?
Right.
I don't know. We don't know. We don't know a lot about Belarus right now. We know a lot about Lukashenko, but not about how that system really works.
We may find out some more soon.
Yeah, no, I think we may be finding out very soon, actually. And on that note, we could wrap it up. That's all we have time for today. You've been listening to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at stories making news in Russia. We do this every Monday, so be sure to tune in. My name is Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical Podcast. Joining me in the studio has been RFRL's news editor, Steve Gutterman. Join us again next week. And now I leave you with the soothing sounds of Noise MC.